This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 136.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello and welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one legitimately bronchial minute at a time. I've been waiting 135 episodes to say that.
I mean, obviously.
I'm Ron Richards, and with me, as always, is Josh Flanagan.
All right, I'm just saying. All right, hold on. Okay.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Love that jacket.
He dressed up. He's money is what he is.
It is. So this minute starts with Henry complaining about not wanting to live anyplace cold, and it ends with Karen all of a sudden very loyal to her parents. So this picks up after the meeting with Henry and Jimmy in the Sherwood Diner. We have pulled out, we've done whatever that's called, the rack focus or zoom, whatever. And now Karen,
the dolly zoom,
and Karen and Henry are in the office of one federal prosecutor, Ed McDonald, talking about joining the witness protection program
in his Brooklyn office of the Strike Force.
Yes, indeed. So should we start with Ed McDonald or?
Let's start with the awesome green jacket.
All right, let's talk about the green jacket first. Yeah.
We see the green jacket before we see Ed. So let's
yeah,
be fair.
True, yeah.
Henry is Henry's really putting on maybe one of my favorite personas in the movie. He's got like the sleazy agent thing going on.
Yep.
At one point he looks up and he goes, "Ed," and he crosses his heart kind of.
Yeah.
You know, I'm telling you this. I'm telling you. Well, like he's like, I'm just trying to be real with you here now about this one thing that is my preference.
Yeah.
He thought he was playing them as much as they were playing him.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. I mean, in the book Wise Guy, he goes more into it. But yeah, this was just another grift for him, you know, getting as much as he could out of it. What I find hysterical in this is him asking to move, saying, I need to move someplace cold. Because I'm bronchial and Karen.
No, not move someplace cold.
Not someplace cold. Someplace warm. Someplace not cold. Because I'm bronchial and Karen going. Yes, he's bronchial. We've never heard any mention of him. Like he's never coughed in this movie. All of a sudden now he's bronchial.
A lot of smoke.
Also, he's lived in New York his entire life, where last I checked is very cold for half the year. So very cold. So clearly I'm getting a plane ticket somewhere. I want to ensure, is he actually bronchial or is it a scam?
It's a scam. It wasn't even, we wasn't even in Florida.
Well, she jumped in on it, though, so I think she believes he might be. I think he said something to Karen at some point, you know, 20 years ago, and she was just like, yeah, he's bronchial. Never thought about it again. So she jumped right in.
Right. And then Ed confirms it and goes, okay, he's legitimately bronchial. We'll take that into consideration. Like,
no, if he's legitimately bronchial.
I tried to use that.
It's like he's never watched this movie before.
I try to use that, like, in conversation as a line. It's very difficult.
Legitimately bronchial?
Okay, fine. If he's legitimately wrong, then we can work something out. But like, it's tough to work that in.
Right.
I find as a reference. So it happens in my head a lot. It doesn't really come out.
What I also like as these minutes progress through this week is the, I mean, Henry is a weird combination. The green jacket and the, like you said, the sleazy agent guy, but also the hair as this week progresses gets larger through this scene.
Yes.
That's what my hair does.
Yeah.
If it was that long and if I kept touching it, it just sort of keeps getting bigger. He's, you know, he's moving around, he's running his hands.
Rubbing a lot. He's stress rubbing.
Yeah, there's a lot of hair rubbing and there's a lot of smoking for both of them. A lot of smoking.
Ed, listen. I love it. Like shit. And the best part is, and we're going to talk about Ed, obviously, but like the best part is how it's played here is how completely straightforward he is.
Yeah.
Ed. He's just like, well, you know, am I going to get to see my parents? No.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like, we're not used to people talking straight.
Well, that's Ed's given a little tough love as well, too. What I think is interesting also is that if you notice the body language in the scene, as well as the lack of eye contact.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As I say, there's a lot of Henry avoiding looking at anybody.
Well, I made a note about Henry acting off the ball. Like, when Karen's talking and Ed's talking, like, he's doing a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And he's really interesting to watch here.
Yeah.
He's leaning back with his hands folded over him.
Yeah. He's letting Karen talk. He's really interesting to watch what he does here. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So before we move on to Ed, I own a green jacket like that. It's awesome.
Oh, I need to get a color jacket, man.
Little darker, but it's
long sleeves.
A blazer. Okay. Yes, long sleeves.
No,
or the short sleeve blazer.
I'd be more impressed if it had no sleeves, Connor. If you're like an '80s thug with the sleeves and they're cut and ripped, kind of like, that'd be great.
But most people associate the green blazer with the Masters, the golf tournament. That's the one of the prizes for winning the Masters, and Sam Snead won the very first green jacket at the Masters in 1949, 16 years after the Masters first began. They started using those as part of the prizing.
Interesting.
And that is your fun fact for this episode.
Now, what's interesting is that I associate a green blazer to the Witness Protection Program. So, I wonder.
Everybody in the Witness Protection Program is wearing a green blazer, which is sort of counterintuitive to them hiding.
Yeah.
I associate it with chronic bronchitis. So
legitimate.
Well, I mean, obviously.
Yeah. Interesting fact on the colored blazers. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I found myself with it holding a purple blazer and almost bought it, and I did not. So
what did I tell you to do?
You told me to buy it. You told me to buy it. It wasn't the right time.
Just wear that with an A shirt underneath it.
Oh, it'd be great. Yeah.
While I grill sausages.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to get a bulldog.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Assistant U.S. Attorney Ed McDonald here. He's playing himself.
Yes.
And he's playing a 10-year older version of himself. So he was about 34. Did you find out when he was born, Ron?
Yeah, I did, but now I don't know.
46.
I think it was. I know he graduated college in 68. So do the math backwards there. So
I put him around 1946, which put him in around 34 years old when the real events happened, and then here he's about 44 years old. So imagine being 34 years old and handling this whole scenario. I can't even imagine that now.
That's crazy.
So what do you got on Ed?
Well, so that he's from that he graduated Boston College in 1968. At the time of this, he was a federal prosecutor and he was focused on white collar crime and organized crime. And he headed up the strike force that was tasked with getting to the bottom of this Lufthansa thing. As we mentioned in the previous minutes, when Henry's name crossed his desk, thanks to a drug bust in Nassau, and they realized kind of what they had with him, and did whatever they could to exploit it. I've got two things. I've got kind of what really happened that got Henry into this place, and then I got a little more background on Ed getting this role. I'll do that first. So, you know, he, of course, he talked to Nick Pileggi, who was writing the book Wise Guy, and gave kind of his quotes and his feedback. He's in the book. And apparently when they were getting ready to do the film, they asked if they can come to Ed McDonald's office to take photos. And they started taking pictures of his office, and they took pictures of his diploma and his family and things like that. And so at this point, Ed took it upon himself to ask Pileggi if they'd cast him in the movie yet. And if they hadn't, he volunteered himself.
And he's a member of SAG.
Yeah. Well, he got a SAG membership from this movie.
Yeah.
And then he said an hour later, Pileggi called him and said, asked him if he was serious. And he said, sure. And so then Scorsese had him in for a screen test, and then he got the part. So this came from an interview in the Wall Street Journal Law Blog.
Law Blog.
Yep. We can't say it without saying that. Where it was about some other case, and whoever from the Wall Street Journal got Ed on the phone is like, well, I got to ask him about Goodfellas and asked him how he got the role. I believe, and this interview was like from 2008 or something like that. I believe this is Ed's memory of it, and I wonder if that's actually what happened. Because as we know, Scorsese likes to cast real people and all that sort of stuff. Do you really think that it was his idea? Hey, why don't you put me in the movie? You know, that said,
would have been.
That said,
I don't disagree.
That said, I went back to Ed McDonald's IMDb profile. IMDb profile. And
you okay?
I'm hanging in. And before Goodfellas in 1990, which was the role that he got a SAG card, he was actually in three episodes of a TV miniseries called Pearl in 1978, where he played an MP sergeant. So my guess is that lawyer Ed McDonald went through law school and lived his life and always wanted to get into acting.
Yes.
And then Goodfellas was his door. And after that, he was in two other movies, Kiss of Death and The Sinatra Club. So
both mob movies?
Yeah, both mob movies, of course. Yeah.
So. Currently.
And sure enough, in Kiss of Death, he played a U.S. attorney.
That's nice.
So currently, 70-year-old Edward McDonald is a partner at Deckert.
Yep.
The famous law firm was founded in 1875 that has over 900 lawyers in the firm currently, with over 27 worldwide offices. And he not only is still a handsome, full head of hair 70-year-old Irishman, but he's got big Irish face.
Yeah.
In the photos you see of him. Lives with his wife in my old neighborhood, Park Slope.
Wow.
I don't know if I ever saw him or not.
I'm guessing in a pretty nice house.
Pretty nice.
I will give Ed McDonald that he's got presence. You know, Josh, you mentioned it earlier, like the straight talk. You know, he's absolutely. He's got that accent. He's got a certain cadence to his voice. You know, like
he is wonderful in this movie. Yeah.
Two things.
Yeah.
One, is it legal for a federal prosecutor to ask for a job acting as himself in a movie?
Ask Rudy Giuliani.
He had left the government at that point.
I thought they were in his office.
They did. And in the interview, he says, this was right before I left the government.
Okay.
He says, this was right before I was going to leave the government after 17 years as a prosecutor.
All right. Well, and then I guess the second thing would be like, so many of the guys in this, you know, who were cops or whatever, or even the criminal, you know, actors, like they're all used to putting on a character and absolutely believing it. So it doesn't, it's not on you. Like, you know, you take somebody into the box and you have to do the thing and, you know, you've got to be able to lie and you've got to be able to be convincing. So they can kind of already act to a certain extent. And
you've got to be able to speak in front of people.
Yeah.
You know, in front of a lot of people, you have to be able to confront all manner of people one-on-one. So he's probably not intimidated being in this scenario. Mm.
And you know, like the stakes are higher when you're a criminal and or law enforcement officer than they are in the movie. So
there is a performance element to being a lawyer, especially a prosecutor a trial lawyer and all that sort of stuff. So I guess it makes sense. But yeah.
My favorite story from him in the book is that when he's going through all of Henry's crimes and found out he had fixed Boston College games, he got really pissed.
Because he was a student there. Yeah.
He was a Boston College alumni. And you know how those people are.
He said he went to those games. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So he.
Who, Irish people? Are you talking about Irish people from New England?
No, Boston basketball people. Ugh.
No, all of it. So he personally prosecuted that case. And he got those people sent up the river.
Yeah.
I'd like to go ahead and point out that Ron just said basketball people as if there's some unifying link of badness between all fans of basketball.
Listen, come live in San Francisco and try to avoid these goddamn Warriors. It's everywhere.
I'll tell you a little something. Yeah. That ain't the basketball fans.
So what's interesting is that, so going back to how they got here, so picking up the transition between the scene that we were just in where Jimmy and Henry were meeting and where Jimmy asked them to do a hit down in Florida, and then now they're in Ed's office. What happened in between was that Henry actually thought after the meeting with Jimmy was that he was safe. Because remember last week we were talking about him being afraid of Jimmy whacking him and all stuff like that. But he said that if Jimmy was expecting me to go to Florida, they weren't going to whack me until I went to Florida. So he felt as if he had like a window to act. And
he's going to be in a movie too?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And
he's
so,
finally going to take up the stage.
And so he wanted to use that time period to basically just look, you know, to do what he does, to keep looking for more money. And so he went out and he rented a car that couldn't be traced to him. And he was just basically going to work, you know, do his thing just to get as much money before he had to deal with whatever was going to happen. But he said that as soon as he got to the house later that afternoon, the house was surrounded by federal agents. And basically, McDonald issued his arrest to be a material witness in Lufthansa. And basically, that's when Henry realized, okay, I'm either cutting a deal or I'm done. And so that's what got him in this position to now to agree to cut a deal and join the witness protection program. So, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, basically Ed McDonald backed him into a corner. So, and I also that's what they do. And I also like in the book, Karen talks about Ed McDonald. And, you know, we're talking how he has a very pointed, straight way of talking. She literally says in the book, McDonald made it plain.
He's plain spoken.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. So
he's a classic, you know, Northeastern Irish type.
Right.
Excuse me, Nicholas Pileggi. I would like to be in your movie playing myself.
Well, who better?
Contact Martin Scorsese. Now,
where do I get an agent?
I do not have an agent. I require one. Do you have a contact for me?
So, yeah. So good job on Ed McDonald making his acting dreams come true.
Yep.
Yeah.
He did it.
Yep.
How do we feel about Karen's dress here? Or dress? Yeah, it's dress.
That's nice. Not bad. Again, Karen has embraced the 80s better than Henry. In my opinion.
Yeah, but even this is a little more timeless. Yeah. And maybe she stands up, you're going to see what the shoulders are doing. But here, I was like, oh.
There are no pads in that. You could tell when she's
extra fabric.
Yeah, there's a lot of fabric in there.
A lot of extra fabric.
She's got some pillowy sleeves going on there. Yeah. So.
But it's a good, you know, it's a light summer look. I don't know. You know, I have no problem with that. Yeah. So I have a question about Ed's office.
Ed's kids?
You're dealing with criminals all the time. Maybe not the picture of your kids there. I don't know.
Right there?
Like right there.
Well, I've had struggles with the layout of the room because it looks as if they're next to like a credenza or something, and that's where the picture of the kids are, and they're on a couch. But then behind them is a bookshelf and another. Like, so is the couch just in the middle of the office?
Yeah, it's probably so big there's a seating area that has room around
it. Yeah, it's like the Oval Office.
Yeah,
a little middle area.
Yeah, because then they cut to Ed, and he's just a bunch of chairs.
There's a lot of chairs in the background.
Yeah, a lot of chairs.
You think they could have cleared those from the shot?
I feel as if federal prosecutors don't get palatial offices like this.
Well, he's in New Brooklyn. York. At the time, he would have had more space because at the time in Brooklyn in 1980 or so, it would have been a lot of room.
Just nothing.
And he's the lead.
Nothing but real estate in Brooklyn. In the
70s. The lead prosecutor, man. Have you ever seen a lead prosecutor's office? Those guys have wield a lot of power.
Yeah. All right. Maybe.
And they get big offices.
Where did you see this?
Lead prosecutors?
Yes. Where have you? What experience are you speaking from?
In the news and documentaries.
All right.
You see press conferences.
Fair enough. I wasn't a gotcha question. It was legitimate. I was legitimately Rocky. I mean,
I feel like I can almost entirely replicate Henry's outfit here.
Really? Yeah.
Well, I have the jacket. All you need is Also, his pants are pulled way up high.
Are you doing it?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Like he's wearing a cummerbund.
Yeah. Well, no, it's the pant. It's the thing where the buckle part of the pant is covered with fabric and goes like to the right towards the pocket.
It's still really high.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is pretty high. Yeah. So he could be bunched up though because he's sitting on the couch. It doesn't look like, and he's been shifting and all that sort of stuff. I don't know. Who knows?
No, that's where the pants went then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. None of these old man pants. They're way up there.
All right.
That wasn't old men then. That was just men.
That said, Ed McDonald looks like he has a very charming family. No pictures of the wife, though.
They're in grave danger because of his vanity.
All right. Do you have any other notes for this minute?
Yeah, just one fuck. One fuck.
Just one. How many? All right. We'll get to the full count later in the week.
I'm guessing you don't have to count during the credits. I guess we'll get to that problem.
We'll get to it.
That'd be great if they pepper in just random spelled out fucks in the credits.
Yeah, that counts.
That totally counts. All right, that's going to wrap it up for minute 136. We're in the home stretch, people. Just strap in. Just two more weeks to go. Tune in for tomorrow for minute 137. Until then, follow us on Twitter, Goodfellas Min, and we're on Facebook and Instagram at Goodfellas Minute. And you can find everything at goodfellasminute.com. You can also find a link there to goodfellasminute.com/support, where you can find different ways where you can support the show. You can shop via Amazon, or you can become a Patreon patron at patreon.com/GFM. If you have any questions or anything you'd like to add about Ed McDonald, you can email us at contact@goodfellasminute.com. And until then, I'm legitimately wrong.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up.